This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
Hi, welcome to today's podcast, The Patriots from Boston to Foxborough. I'm your host, Joe Santos. In today's podcast, we will relive the team's first year in Foxborough and get intimate details from Upton Bell, their GM at the time, and learn about some of the challenges the Pats faced during his tenure. Don't forget, you can find this and many other great podcasts on the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. Part 3, First Year Foxborough Follies. With the tumultuous reign of the Cleve Rush era behind them, the Patriots turned their attention to the development of their new home, Schaefer Stadium, named after Schaefer Beer. This would be one of the first facilities to have corporate sponsorship. After playing their home games for the first 11 years of their existence in three different stadiums, the Patriots now had a place to call their own, a brand new facility in Foxborough, Massachusetts, a town with a population of 18,600 and located approximately halfway between Boston and Providence. Since the team received no funding from the state of Massachusetts or the town of Foxborough, the stadium was privately funded and as a result was built on the cheap for $7.1 million. This would help to explain the bare bones aesthetics of the stadium as it consisted primarily of aluminum benches and with a capacity of slightly greater than 60,000 was one of the smallest stadiums in the league and barely met the NFL's new requirement that all facilities needed to have at least 50,000 seats. When I asked Upton Bell, who was the Pats general manager at the time, why the team settled in Foxborough, his simple answer was that nobody else wanted them. Indeed, Sullivan had been turned down by the city of Boston no less than 30 times on various stadium proposals. Bell also said it was widely acknowledged, but that by the time the stadium was finished, it was already obsolete. Years later, when the Pats drafted Stanley Morgan out of the University of Tennessee, upon his initial visit to Foxborough, Morgan thought the stadium was the practice facility, as he was accustomed to playing in a stadium that seated 80,000 fans. With the team's move to its new home, Sullivan thought it would be a good idea to rename the team and brand them as the Bay State Patriots, until Bell pointed out the obvious that it wouldn't take long for the Boston media to refer to them as the BS Pats. Bell convinced the team to settle on the name New England to broaden their appeal to the six-state region. And while the team no longer had the erratic Rush roaming the sidelines, they kept his assistant, John Mazur, removing the interim tag and naming him head coach for the new season, something that Bell disagreed with. And some of the zaniness that marked Rush's time with the team would continue under Mazur. The first game played at Schaefer Stadium was a preseason contest on August 15, 1971 against the New York Giants and is forever known as the Nightmare on Route 1. What was intended to be a celebration for the opening of the club's new stadium instead turned out to be one of the most absurd chapters in the franchise's history. Kickoff for the preseason game was set for 8:30 p.m. By mid-afternoon, though, it was painfully clear that most of the announced sellout crowd of 60,423, the largest in Patriots history, would be stuck in traffic hours before the coin flip. Thousands never made it to the game. "A sight you can't believe," said Bell, recalling what he saw from the top of the Schaefer stands around 4 p.m. "Miles and miles of traffic, up Route 1 and back to 95, said Bell. I could see the Roman legions marching, and it wasn't good. We were in big trouble. Adding to the drama was the fact that the stadium didn't have goalposts, which had to be delivered by helicopter prior to the game. By the time the game ended at 11:15 p.m., and the Pats had won 20-14, there were still cars in the parking lot trying to get out at 2:30 a.m. Some fans didn't get home until dawn. Bell jokes that there are people still stuck in their cars along Route 1 55 years later. The Los Angeles Rams were due in town for the next preseason game a few weeks later on August 29th, and with the kickoff scheduled for 8:30 p.m. Bell said, "I had to call the Rams and ask for the switch to 1 o'clock. "Sure," they said, "as long as we gave them a draft pick." We didn't do it, of course, but I mean, you can't make this stuff up. As if the traffic jam wasn't bad enough, the stadium also faced a major plumbing problem. Horrific plumbing issues caused scores of stadium toilets to either not flush or overflow. It was also discovered that the visitors' locker room urinal was installed 6 feet above ground. Some of these issues may have been a result of the union workers showing their disapproval of the team's hiring of non-union workers. In any event, the Foxborough Board of Health, noted Bell, had no choice but to shut the place down until a quote-unquote super flush event satisfied health inspectors that the plumbing indeed worked. So, the day before preseason game against the Atlanta Falcons and just a few weeks before the regular season opener with the Raiders, a committee of 320 people, which included Patriots employees, stadium workers, and even a few sports writers, were recruited to participate in what would be known as the Great Flush, which Bell notes was actually filmed by NBC. Sports reporter Ron Hobson, who, as you may recall, was a witness at Rush's last ever press conference as head coach, participated in the Great Flush and said, "I was stationed in the men's room on the west side. There was one other guy with me. He was assigned to the toilets. I had the urinals. I can't remember exactly what the signal was. I think it was a horn, but when the blast went off, we had to flush everything as quickly as we could." There was a great gurgle, a tense moment or two. The Falcons, who were on standby at Walpole High School, were awaiting the results. And then, the Great Flush was a great success. Per Bell, "No one had to pee on the floor. We were saved." One journalist wrote of the event, "It was the first time that the sports writers in this town all pulled for the Patriots." The stadium was allowed to open, but to avoid future problems, the town insisted that there would be no more night games and all games would have a 1 p.m. kickoff time until further notice. Despite the traffic and plumbing issues, the 1971 season was better than expected as the team improved upon its 2-12 record from the year before by going a respectable 6-8. Days after the successful Great Flush, the team opened up the regular season with an upset win over the mighty Oakland Raiders. And here's a fun fact. The Raiders were the opponent for the first regular season game at Schaefer and the last game ever played there in the infamous Tuck Rule game. The Pats also beat the eventual AFC champion Miami Dolphins on quarterback Jim Plunkett and wide receiver Randy Fataha's birthday. Fataha had an interesting background. An undersized receiver who was 5'10" and played with Plunkett at Stanford University, Fataha was selected in the 17th round of the NFL draft by the Rams and then released in training camp. After he was unable to latch on to another NFL team, Fataha joined the cast at Disney World and got a job working as one of the Seven Dwarfs. With the Patriots needing another receiver to complete their roster, Bell selected Fataha, who went on to have a pretty nice career. He was named to UPI's AFC All-Rookie Team in 1971 and played 6 seasons with the Patriots. The Pats also won the last game of the year against the defending Super Bowl champion Baltimore Colts. But even in victory, there was controversy. Bell made it clear he was not a fan of Coach Mazur and wanted him out. So, in the days leading up to the final game of the year, a meeting was held at Anthony's Pier restaurant in Boston between Bell, Sullivan, and the board, where Bell again reiterated his desire for a new head coach who he felt would be better suited to handle the team's future. ownership preferred to keep Mazur since he was a Notre Dame guy like many on the Patriots board. The parties came up with an agreement that said if the Pats lost their final game against the Colts by more than 2 touchdowns, Mazur would be fired. Otherwise, he would keep his job. Having already wrapped up a playoff spot, there wasn't much incentive for the Colts to win this game. And when Plunkett hit Vataha on an 88-yard bomb that sealed the game for the Patriots, Bell said to himself, "Upton, you're screwed." Don't forget to join us for the next segment of the Patriots from Boston-Foxborough as we discuss the new direction the team would take after the disastrous 1972 season. You can find this and many other great podcasts on the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. I'm your host, Joe Santos. Thanks for listening.